This morning's lesson from Mark is an interesting and challenging passage, primarily because in the story, Jesus changes his mind. And one of the things that Christians traditionally have believed about Jesus is that Jesus was perfect. And so for many Christians, the idea that Jesus might change his mind, that's an idea around which it is difficult to wrap one's mind. Christians, having believed Jesus was perfect, often have assumed that from the time Mary wrapped his sacred little buns in swaddling clothes until Joseph of Arimathea laid his broken body in a tomb, Jesus' every thought was correct and accurate in every way possible. This, by the way, is part of what got Galileo in trouble. He said the earth revolved around the sun, but Jesus said the sun rises and sets. And so how could Jesus have been wrong? And when I was attending Westmont College, an evangelical liberal arts college in Santa Barbara, a group of deeply pious students banded together to oppose the way professors in the religious studies program were talking about who wrote the first five books of the Bible. The professors, like most of the world's good biblical scholars, were suggesting that the first five books of the Bible came from several different oral and written traditions and then were edited together during the time of the Babylonian exile, some 500 years before the birth of Christ. Well, not so, said these students. Moses wrote these books, and we know Moses wrote these books because in Matthew 19, verse 8, Jesus quotes from the Torah and attributes that quote to Moses. And it may sound kind of ridiculous to you and me, but those students, all of them having earned a whole high school diploma, caught the attention of a guy named Walter Martin, who called himself the Bible Answer Man. And the Bible Answer Man had a call-in show on Christian talk radio in Southern California, and he'd written a couple of books on cults, and he came up to Westmont at the invitation of these students to preach against what he called the cult of liberalism. And when he did, Westmont's board of trustees paid attention, and they denied tenure to one of the Old Testament professors. And a few years later, when I was in seminary, someone preached a sermon on this morning's lesson from Mark in the chapel of the university that's next to the seminary I attended. This preacher, she said, the woman in the story, the mother of the little girl who needed healing and who Jesus called a dog, the preacher suggested that the mother taught Jesus the humanity in foreign children, taught Jesus to recognize the humanity in foreign children. And I don't know what the Bible Answer Man would have thought of that. But a few of the seminary students who happened to be in attendance that Sunday morning went into a little bit of a kerfluffle. One friend of mine in particular, who was not a particularly conservative guy, but just sort of a mainline Christian guy. He was a guy from Georgia who, in the magical reality of this small world of ours, was dating one of my brother-in-law's ex-girlfriends. He wrote the preacher a letter, and it was a thoughtful letter, and they ended up meeting together, and it was a friendly conversation, but my friend remained resolute. Jesus, according to this friend of mine, did all the teaching. No one ever changed the mind of him who was perfect. And you know, for a long time, I was inclined to agree with this friend of mine, but after a while, it started getting too hard to ignore or to deny what clearly is stated in the story. Jesus in the story is in modern-day Lebanon. It's the furthest he ever gets from Jerusalem in his adult ministry, according to the Gospels. And while he's there, a local woman asks him to heal her daughter. And at first, Jesus refuses. Based on the fact that the girl isn't Jewish, Jesus says, I came to help my own people. I can't give the children's food to the dogs. Ouch. And the woman says, well, even the dogs get crumbs that fall from the table. And then Jesus repents. Yes, Jesus repents. There's no other way to read it. Some people say, in fact, most people say, Jesus was testing the woman's faith. But if he made a mother pass a test before he healed her daughter, that hardly would be evidence of perfection, right? Well, it turns out that I still believe Jesus may have been perfect, but I've come to learn that perfection is measured not so much in being right all the time, but maybe perfection is measured in one's ability to change and to grow, particularly when it comes to seeing the humanity in other people. I also happen to believe that regardless of what this story tells us about Jesus, the story really isn't about Jesus as much as the story is about the church. The Gospels were written at a time when the church was trying to figure itself out. In particular, the church was trying to decide if it would admit non-Jewish people into its membership. There were people who wanted the church to remain a Jewish sect, and there were people who wanted to open up the church's membership to non-Jews, to people of every race and every ethnicity. And so as a way of articulating this principle of inclusion, Mark, whose gospel was written by and for a community of people who wanted to expand the membership, Mark put this story in the gospel as a way of demonstrating a principle of inclusion. And the passage remains in the gospel as a reminder for us. No child of God is to be treated like a dog. And this is a good story for Christians to be reading today, particularly if those Christians happen to be living in Europe or in the United States, because both the United States and the European Union are in serious need of broadening our understanding of who is human. Like many people in the world, I have been distressed by news coming out of Europe that tells stories of refugees fleeing violence in Syria and Iraq, Libya and Eritrea, only to have the doors of European safety shut in their faces. Because there are no legal ways for most of the refugees to get to Europe, many of the refugees face grave danger in overcrowded and unsafe boats at sea. And some die, including Aylin Kurdi, a 3-year-old child who washed up on a beach in Turkey and whose photo shocked the world last week. Those refugees who do make it to Europe often are met by hostile and racist Europeans, many of them right-wing extremist neo-fascist activists. And even the most enlightened politicians seem to lack either the means or a will to make a difference. The words of William Butler Yeats come to mind. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. And it's easy for us to look east, casting aspersions across the pond. But before any citizen of this country gets too self-righteous, we should remember that the Europeans are doing now precisely what we did last summer, when wave after wave of migrants, many of them unaccompanied children, crossed over the United States southern border, escaping violence in Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. We didn't force these refugees into dangerous sea voyages. We made them risk and often lose their lives in the desert. But the end result was basically the same. Those who survived the journey north found an unwelcome and often hostile nation in which so-called patriots were screaming vindictive vitriol, turning back busloads of children who were looking for safe places to live. These same kinds of people packed city council meetings across the nation as towns and cities tried to decide if they might provide refuge to children, and the bigots in our midst turned them back. Dearly beloved, our nation, like the nations of Europe, needs to meet a woman who will make us see the humanity in all God's children. We, like Jesus, need to change. We need to change because the refugee children in leaking boats at sea or walking up the arroyos in the desert, they are our sisters and our brothers. They are children of parents who love them as much as we love our children or our grandchildren or our nieces or nephews or our friends. And in a few minutes, we will be celebrating the sacrament of Holy Communion. And as we do, I invite you to see the communion table as a place where we encounter our mutual humanity as God's beloved children. For the God who invites us to participate in this means of grace invites all people to come as equal members of the household of God. So come to the table knowing that the table is a place where we are given grace to change, to be better people, to improve our ability to see the humanity of others, to see the image of God reflected in children of every ethnicity, every race, from every corner of the globe. And sometimes that embrace, that grace which recognizes the need for all God's children to be loved, sometimes it starts close to home. Sometimes the person whose basic humanity, whose basic goodness we need to recognize is our own. Earlier in the sermon, I told you about the seminary friend of mine who was disturbed by the sermon which suggested that Jesus learn from the woman in today's lesson from Mark. That friend of mine married my brother-in-law's ex-girlfriend, and he went off to Michigan to serve a church, and I lost track of him. I lost track of him until, by the magic of Facebook, we were reacquainted a couple of years ago. Since last we talked, he's been divorced, and he was back in Georgia selling real estate, working part-time as the pastor of a tiny congregation, singing second tenor in the Atlanta Gay Men's Chorus. Turns out the humanity he needed to embrace and to love and to accept was his own. The image of God he needed to see manifested in a person was his own. And thanks be to God, he found the grace to do so. May we all find that grace. May we all find that acceptance. May we all find that love for ourselves and for every child of God, especially those fleeing violence and war. May God protect them. May God bless them. And may God keep them safe. Amen.